opening tip, Damian Lillard dropping what Kendrick Perkins calls a quiet 39-7-7 last night in a win over the Wolves. Paul, this has got to be the version of Dame you expected, right, after they lost back-to-back games coming in.
You expect this from Damian Lillard. When you constantly see him shoot from half court, getting buckets, this is who Dame is right here.
Whew. And, you know.
But you know what? I never get bored watching it.
No, that is true. And I was going to just say the Timberwolves, they're in a state right now with Karl Anthony Towns out. Robert, you know those games. Those are get right games, right? When you play a team like that.
Oh, yeah. You go out, you try to get your numbers. You try to get back that rhythm.
All day long.
Right? You know those games. Y'all know those
games.
You get
that rhythm.
Not only against the contenders, you feast on these weak teams.
Right? Team that doesn't have its star right now. Just saying. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am alongside, indeed, at the other end of the desk. I can almost see him from here. Seven-time champion.
Seven-time.
Robert Horry. Boom. Boom. And one-time champion.
One time.
But finals MVP. And he only has one ring, but he does have two phones. So it's important to remember that is always, right?
You know
he's got the both.
You know that.
Yep, you know.
You know I'll stay ready.
Boom. Yeah. Coming up on this show, Luka Doncic put up 38-13-9 last night in a win over the Nuggets. Okay. What's changed for him after a slow start? We'll discuss that and our expectations for Lonzo and LaMelo Ball's first head-to-head matchup in the league right here on ESPN, 7 o'clock Eastern, so stick around for that too. First, though, it was dramatic. I will give you that. 1 minute, Sixers guard Seth Curry was on the bench for Philadelphia's game against Brooklyn last night. The next, he wasn't. Rumors began flying, and by postgame, they were confirmed. Curry had been removed because a positive COVID test had come back mid-game. So, yeah. Dramatic. And because it played out in front of the cameras, it spawned an avalanche of questions. Should all the Sixers quarantine now? Should the Nets game against Memphis tonight be canceled? Are we wiping the next 2 weeks of Philadelphia's schedule off the board? Well, here are your answers. No, no, and also no. The league is not shutting down for Curry's positive tests, much like the league did not shut down for the four other positive tests it announced just a few hours earlier in the day as part of the league's routine weekly update. As Adam Silver said multiple times before the season started, positive tests are expected outside a bubble. So with Curry, just like the others across the league who've tested positive in the past month, now is when the protocols kick in. As we speak, the NBA's team of scientists is holding contact tracing interviews with the Sixers. And here's what they're looking for. Was anyone else on the team in a small indoor space with Curry for more than 15 minutes without a mask? So if Curry played video games with someone in a hotel room without a mask on, that would count as a close contact, and that person would have to self-isolate for up to 7 days, depending on the level of contact and the sick person's viral load at the time. For example, when several Rockets players got haircuts in a player's apartment, and shortly afterward, Kenyon Martin Jr. tested positive, the other players, including John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins, had to isolate and miss games, even though they never ended up testing positive themselves. And here's another example just today. The Celtics announced three of their players are going to have to sit the next few games due to contact tracing. Or this one, last night. Alex Caruso returned to the Lakers lineup after missing 5 games due to contact tracing. Alex said the protocol had kicked in because a friend who had stopped by his house after Christmas had ended up testing positive. So he had to sit, even though he never ended up testing positive himself. So let's get back to Seth Curry. How much is contact tracing going to affect the rest of the Sixers? The answer is probably some, but not the whole team. For example, the NBA's health experts say that sitting in a team meeting with masks and distancing, not a close contact. And here's the key one. Playing in an NBA game with or against someone who ends up being positive is usually not considered a close contact either. How? Well, league doctors look at the same second spectrum on-court tracking that scouts use. And so far, they've found it's extremely rare for any one player to be in close proximity to another player for a full 15 minutes, even just cumulatively, over the course of a game. There are exceptions to that, of course, which is why they double-check that data, as well as practice facilities, security cameras, and the new tracking devices that players will be required to wear for team activities starting tomorrow. And they also, of course, check test results. Every NBA player and every staff member around them regularly gets daily testing, which means Seth Curry must have tested negative the day before yesterday. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been on the bench last night. And on game days, players get double tested. The first is a rapid test, which Curry presumably also passed yesterday morning. The second is another PCR test, which usually takes around 8 to 10 hours to come back. Clearly, that's the one that came back positive, which led to, that mid-game removal last night. It was certainly jolting to see, but it's not something that's going to shut down the league. Not in this very strange season, where the drama is not only confined to the court. And I do want to now welcome in ESPN senior writer Zach Lowe. Zach, now that we're faced with the realities of playing professional basketball during a pandemic, do you think the league is going to be able to manage these types of situations without a huge impact on the schedule?
This is what everybody signed up for when we left the bubble. I mean, think about this. 6 months ago or whatever, the league was trying with the medical review board to basically unilaterally bar higher risk people from even going to the bubble, including older coaches. And now we've all decided, we're all going to get on planes and stay in hotels and play basketball. This is life. This is going to continue to happen, especially after the holidays. And Rachel, you mentioned this. The team that people haven't been talking about, we're talking about the Sixers and the Nets and future games being postponed. I do think things like that are going to happen throughout the season. I haven't heard a lot of talk about the Wizards, who played against Seth Curry. You mentioned the stuff about how a game is not necessarily considered close proximity. I mean, I guess I still feel like what we know about this virus is outweighed by what we don't know. So I believe that? I'm not sure. But the Wizards played Seth Curry the night before. As you said, presumably he passed. He was negative at a point of contact rapid test before that game. If I were a member of the Washington Wizards, knowing what I do about incubation periods and all this, I would still be a little nervous today. I mean, I don't know that we can just sort of leave that game behind and pretend we're just moving forward from it. So this is all scary stuff, and all you can do is hope that everyone follows the rules as best as possible. But I don't think this kind of stuff is going to stop, and they built a break into the schedule for makeup games and all that. They're going to keep trying to soldier through.
All right, well, I want to bring Paul and Robert back into this conversation. Paul, how difficult do you think it's going to be for teams to put out a competitive product night in and night out when these protocols are happening, especially the contact tracing ones?
Well, we're seeing it right now when you see key players to each team have to sit out because of protocol. I mean, we saw an example of this because of the NFL. You know, they started before us. We had a bubble initially. Now we're out the bubble, so now you have travel, hotel. You know, you're interacting with different people. And so this is going to continue throughout the season. What I do suggest, though, and I've been thinking about this, because you don't want to lose your best product. I think when the playoffs start, we go back to the bubble. I really do, because you don't want to lose a game because LeBron is in protocol Joel Embiid. You know what I'm saying? So we got to get through the season. We know it's going to be difficult, but I suggest going back to the bubble for playoffs.
I totally agree. I was thinking the same thing, because if you look at what happened in the bubble, it was clear. Mm-hmm. Nobody got COVID. Everybody was in a bubble. Everybody was doing what they were supposed to do. Because think about it. This AC Fresh, a friend just came by to just say hi.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't have COVID, he had to miss a couple of games. Yep. You know, AC Fresh is not the top eight guys on that team, but he's a significant player. And you can't have your main guys, who we play top dollar to see, missing the game because he came in contact with somebody. It would mess up the game. So I know the guys don't want to hear that, and they don't want to go to the bubble. But for the safety of the guys in the game, they should do it.
Well, I know the hope in the league is that by the time we get there, by the time we get to the playoffs, and remember, they're going to be later this year because we started later, that enough of the country will have gotten vaccinated and that enough players will have gotten vaccinated that this will be less of a problem and you will need less of a bubble. But the vaccine, as we've already seen, is rolling out more slowly than they had hoped.
How do we know how the effects of the vaccine is going to work? You know, I mean, that's the question marks that I have, and I'm not even in sports anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, how does it affect the old people around you? How does it affect pregnant people, like the people who we are around our daily lives? And so I'm just not so sure that is the 100% answer.
For me, you know, we always talk about, you go to college sports right now, the protocol is they kept Trevor Lawrence out because they thinking COVID would attack the heart.
Yep.
You know, these guys are running up and down the court and doing exerting a lot of energy. How will that vaccine affect an active person? We don't know yet, because we still in the prelims of this vaccine. So It's hard to say that. You know, I would be scared to take the vaccine in person because, you know, I have heart issues and I don't know what it'll do to me.
Yeah, no, it's complicated. There's a lot of scientists doing a lot of work on this, and I think the NBA is going to continue to trust in them, but it is complex, and we will see how it affects the Sixers and their opponents, as Zach points out, both past and future as they go forward. Now, Kyrie did not play in the next home win over the Sixers. He's also not traveling with the team to Memphis for the Nets game against the Grizzlies tonight. Caris LeVert said after that game, Irving is dealing with a personal issue. He actually texted his teammates before the game. Robert, what is your reaction to this? Last night, as of last night, Steve Nash said he didn't have the information about what it was.
See, for me, you have a responsibility to your teammates, to your coaches, and to the staff to let them know what's going on. I know a lot of stuff happened in the past couple of days that's led to a lot of unrest. We know how socially active Kyrie is, so we can't, I don't want to speculate to what it is, but I still think it's not about just texting your teammates. It's got to text everybody in that front office to let them know, because I look at it like this. What if I decide to not, you know what, I don't want to send you a paycheck this week. You know, I let you know what's going to happen with that, you know? And so he has a responsibility. You know, if I'm his teammate right now, I'm like, dude, you need to call me. Don't text me. I want to hear it out your mouth why you're not showing up, because we depend on you, and you're one of the leaders of our team. If you're going to sit out, we need to know why.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's different, though. You know that, Rachel. I mean, some people open up to some people and some people don't. You know, sometimes I go through things and I don't tell people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm like, look, not right now. It's personal. And, you know, maybe when it's all said and done, we can come back to that. But everybody is different. You know, Kyrie is a different type of individual, just like me, you and Robert are. And so, but like he said, it is the communication. Mm-hmm. You know, he communicated with his teammates. It'll be nice to communicate at least with your head coach, let him know, you know, I won't be here for personal reasons. And I don't have to explain that reason because maybe it's something that's touching that I don't feel like opening up to somebody about. Right. And so, but it is his responsibility to let the organization know.
Well, as Robert says, it's the team that has to be right by it, right? Mm-hmm. So,
correct.
Zach, I guess that's my question to you is how do the Nets feel? Do the Nets brass feel with your communications with the team that they feel good by this? Because if they do, then I do.
Yeah, I would defer to the Nets. And look, just one thing you're already hearing from players, coaches, people on the traveling parties is just like the bubble created a certain mental strain and anxiety for players and everybody there, this season will too. It's just different. I mean, the Spurs were just in their hotel rooms in Los Angeles for 4 days. Yeah, they're nice hotel rooms, five-star hotels, all that. You're still stuck there for 4 days. People are scared. People are scared when they hear about positive tests. I don't know what it is. I don't know why Kyrie is not with the team. I don't think the Nets higher-ups know yet. And I think, you know what? So far, what I've heard is they're deferring to Kyrie, give him his space. When you say personal reasons, I think some people, like just like Paul said, some people aren't comfortable revealing what those personal reasons are. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't comfortable kind of prying and saying, hey, what are your personal reasons? We need to know. People are pretty respectful of people's space and whatever space they need. And I think that's the fact that the Nets are taking now. Now, if this goes on for weeks and days or whatever, and they don't have an explanation, maybe things have to change. But right now, everyone's just sort of, you know, let's just let it go and let him do what he needs to do. And it's going to be a long, tough season for everybody.
All right, Zach. Well, you will be back later in the show, so thank you and sit tight. Before the break, I do want to talk about LeBron James because, like with so many issues that cross our nation's consciousness, after yesterday's game against the Spurs, LeBron was asked for his reaction to the pro-Trump mob that stormed the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. And as he was wearing a T-shirt with the message, "Do you understand now?" in block letters, here was his reaction. Take a listen.
We live in two Americas. And that was prime example of that yesterday. And if you don't understand that or don't see that after seeing what you saw yesterday, then you really need to take a step back, not even just one step, maybe four or one or even 10 steps backwards, and ask yourself, how do you want your kids, or how do you want, you know, your grandkids, how do we want America to be viewed as? How do we want to live, you know, in this beautiful country? Because yesterday was not it.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here in Los Angeles with Paul Pierce, Robert Ori. Joining us remotely again is our friend Zach Lowe. And guys, let's talk about Luka Doncic. Started the season slow for him, putting up regular All-Star averages of about 24, 6, and 6 over his first four games. But the last three, he has taken off, dropping almost 33 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists per game. Zach, what's changed for Luka?
Probably nothing. Maybe he played his way into shape, but this was going to, I mean, it's Luka Doncic. He's not going to slump forever. He's fine. We always overreact to these first five games. So if somebody's slumping, somebody's on fire, it all comes back normal. He's already shooting 70% at the rim again, getting anywhere he wants to go. The one area of concern, though, is his three-point shot, 31% last year. He's in the 20s now. That's got to get better for him to really, really reach the apex MVP level stage, I think. But that's coming along slowly. Everything else, you just got to give these guys time. He's Luka Doncic. He's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you said it right, Zach. I mean, he's getting his legs up under him. What you got to understand, it wasn't much of a preseason. They had about two or three games. And, you know, usually guys use that time to get into game shape because it doesn't matter what you do in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Until you play those games, that's when you get into game shape. And he used those first four games. He got his legs up under him. And this is the Luka Doncic who most of us predicted is going to be MVP this year. And he's playing at that level right now.
Yeah, he's playing at the MVP level. Like I said last time I was on the show, he was not in shape yet. Now
right.
he's running
no,
in shape.
No, you did. You called it.
And that's a big difference in this game. People don't understand. When you have a shortened offseason, when you go long into the playoffs, you take even more of a rest in the offseason to get your body right. Because when you have a lot of minutes played like this guy, you take a pounding. So your body has a rest. And then when you come back, you kind of ease your way into it. And I think also everybody told him he was going to be MVP. So I feel like he had a little pressure on him.
Yeah.
And now he's starting to relax because when you put pressure on yourself like that, you try to do too much and your performance falls.
Yeah. And look, I know, and I talked to him about this before the Christmas Day game. He has a lot of experience dealing with pressure, right? He's been a prodigy mm-hmm. since he was 13 years old. He's played with men older than him. That being said, being an MVP, Vegas' leading MVP candidate in the NBA at that age, I think you're right. I think it is a new level of pressure, and he just sort of was getting that with his physicality and legs getting under him. And then, of course, the next step is in this next week is when we expect Kristaps Porzingis to come back also. Robert, how much is that going to open up and change Luka's game?
I think it's not going to change anything because the way Luka plays, he controls the game in so many different ways. He puts people in the position to be successful, and that's the great thing about a point guard like himself. He can make everybody around him better. In this situation, if Porzingis come back, he's going to open the middle up more for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he can drive. You don't have Steinley out there to, you know, clog up the middle, so he can drive more, kick it out for three, so it's going to be trouble for a lot of teams in the West.
Yeah, especially if Porzingis could get back eventually. I'm not saying right away. He's going to eventually get back to where he was a year ago. That's going to spell danger for the rest of the league because at times where on the scouting report you'll double Luka Doncic, you can't do that now. Once you have Porzingis out there at times when you put them in the pick and roll, that's a scary thing to watch. Those two in a pick and roll, LeBron and AD, they're right up there with those guys in sparse pick and roll two-man games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Dallas has already changed its starting five once. They're starting Cauley Stein and Maxi Kleber. Now, that lineup that we all thought we would see, Josh Richardson, Luka, Tim Hardaway, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Porzingis rounding it out, that has really, really big two-way potential. You got great offensive players and a few great defensive players, including KP, who's a really, really elite rim protector. That's the lineup I want to see, and I'm interested to see if Rick Carlisle goes to it once Porzingis is back, because that's the highest ceiling version of this team. But Luka is Luka no matter who he's on the floor with. But more talent helps.
Absolutely. Klebo, you mentioned, really good last night. And the fact that they pulled out a clutch game is something that they hadn't done consistently last season. Luka had promised going into the season, we're going to have learned from our mistakes. We're going to be better at it. And, in fact, last night they were. Now, if there's a winner, that means there's a loser. So on the other end of that game was the Nuggets. They are now 3-5 on the season. That's good for 12th in the West at the moment. Zach, I know you had the Nuggets when you did your tiers as being in a pretty good tier. So what has gone wrong so far this season?
Well, this one's easy. They're 28th in defense. And when you're 28th in defense, you ain't going to win a whole lot of games. And that's just the bottom line. If you're that bad, you're that bad. And it's going to look, they don't have great defensive personnel. They lost Jeremy Grant. They lost Torrey Craig. But they should be better than this. Gary Harris is solid. Will Barton is capable. Paul Millsap, Jamichael Green, PJ Dozier. They have guys that play defense. Even Jokic is not quite as bad as people make him out to be. He's not good, but he's not bad. Jamal Murray plays hard. Like, they shouldn't be this bad. And in the past, they've allowed a lot of threes and a lot of shots at the rim, and they got kind of lucky with teams missing those shots. This year, they're not allowing a lot of threes or a lot of shots at the rim. Teams are just making everything, so maybe some of it is a little bit of luck, But Denver just hasn't looked right. And to win in the NBA, these guys can speak to it. Like, if you play bad defense or you're 5% sort of dialed back in your effort level, these teams are coming for your heart every single night. They just got to be better.
Yeah, I also think so with the absence of Michael Porter Jr. You know, he's not known as a great defensive player, but what he does do, he gives them versatility in that lineup. You're talking about a guy who you put him in pick and roll on the defensive end, he can switch out on the guards. He can slide his feet pretty good. He has length to block shots. And so I really think that hurts them not having him out there because of the protocol. And also, I'm not worried about the Denver Nuggets. They came back from down 1-3 in the playoffs twice.
So many times, Paul.
Come on. I mean, you're worried about Denver. You know, they're resilient. They're going to find a way.
Maybe that's their problem. They're thinking about that.
They're thinking they can come back. We'll catch it up later.
Yeah, it's amazing the difference that one player can make. I look at this team without Jerami Grant. They're not the same team.
Yes.
Because you can look at a team and say, okay, what can I do? All of a sudden, the guy dives on the floor. He gets a dunk. And that gives you a spark. And you really need this now when there's no crowd in the stands to give you that extra energy. With him not being in this game, makes a big difference because guys like this, like I said, you need them. You have them to guard anybody on the floor at any time. And now you're looking around like, okay, who's going to guard the best guy? We don't have anybody that can do that because Jamal Murray, we need you to stay fresh to put up points.
Now, Jerami Grant being missing is somewhat divisive in terms of how much people think that matters. Zach, where are you on the Jerami Grant spectrum?
A little lower in terms of how much it matters. I think it matters. It was a little bit overblown. I mean, for this team, it matters because he was one of their only options on those big wings. I just don't think he guarded those big wings as well as people thought he did. He doesn't rebound as well. He's better than what they had. But I do think collectively, and again, I think Paul's right. Michael Porter Jr. has not been a good defensive player in the NBA, but he's young. He's learning and he's big and he gives them some versatility and some more options about who can play with whom and what lineups they can play. I do think that matters. But I thought the departure of Jerami Grant was a little bit overblown. I do think the Nuggets with time will get right. Their offense is unbelievable. But, you know, Paul mentioned that MPJ is out because of coronavirus protocols. This season is just going to be weird. Guys are going to be in and out. Multiple guys are going to be in and out at the same time. It's going to be hard for teams to get their rhythm, and that's a little worrisome.
All right. Well, Zach, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again soon. The rest of you stick with us on this show because coming up, Lonzo and LaMelo Ball face off as NBA players for the first time tonight on ESPN. What do you guys expect from this matchup going forward from the Ball brothers? Stick around. We will discuss all of it next right here on The Jump. Here's our NBA Friday doubleheader on ESPN and the app. The Hornets take on the Pelicans, 7:30 Eastern. Then it's the second matchup in 3 days between the Clippers and Warriors. Coverage starts with NBA Countdown at 7 Eastern. And now here's Cassidy Huppert with Lonzo and LaMelo Ball, who are going to face each other for the first time as pros tonight.
Ball, right wing three. Good!
There's Ball for three, and he hits!
We know playing in the NBA was something the Ball brothers talked about since they were kids. But Lonzo, how much did you guys talk about playing against each other in the league?
I think we always talk about playing on the same team, honestly. So we've always played together. This is kind of the first time that we got matched up on opposite sides. But I know it's going to be a lot of fun. We had a lot of battles in the backyard. So to really kind of bring it to real life, if you will, you know, on the NBA court is going to be something amazing.
The last time that we saw you guys go one-on-one on ESPN was in your backyard, and there may or may not have been a crossover and then a drop to the concrete. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I remember it being staged.
Hey!
I'm done! Watch out! I'm done!
I love that. LaMelo, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Lonzo, no, that was staged. Lonzo posted this adorable photo of all three Ball brothers from their childhood. Shout out to LiAngelo, who signed with the G League to take part in the league's restart bubble that they're having. Paul, what are your expectations for LaMelo versus Lonzo tonight?
Well, LaMelo is going to have more opportunity than Lonzo because Lonzo has other superstars on his team, but I expect LaMelo to put on a show. I mean, this is Big Brother. He's out here to show him, like, look, I'm better than Big Brother now. Mm-hmm. He's definitely, I think, more talented, but it's always the little little brother always want to show up the big brother because they remember them days when big bro used to knock him on his butt.
Oh, yo, no doubt. Think about this. You got to think about it. You got the young brother who is so cocky. And the old brother's like, you know what? Hold on now. Hold on, rookie. Let me put you in your place. I'm going to show you. I've been in this league for 4 years now. I'm going to show you what I can do. I guarantee you. I'm not going to say I guarantee because I'm not going to be like Charles, but it's going to be a good game. I guarantee it's going to be a good game. That's the only thing I'm guaranteeing.
You're not putting $100,000 on
it? I'm not putting $100,000, but I bet you that Big Brother puts him on his butt one time.
Staged or not staged. There we go. All right, let's move over to the nightcap on ESPN. We're going to have the second ESPN this week between the Clippers and Warriors. In fact, it's the second in 3 days. Now, on Wednesday, the Clippers won by 7 in a game that was tied with 5 minutes left. So very competitive. Tonight, L.A. favored by 6.5. Robert, what do you think is more likely to occur tonight, a Clippers blowout or a Warriors upset?
I'm going to think a Warriors upset because I think with Draymond Green starting to round into shape, get this team defensively ready, and all these guys are playing good. You know, they're up and down, but I think this is going to be a game they can measure themselves. This is a measuring stick game where they can go out and say, hey, you're playing against a team that they say might go to the championship. Let's show everybody in the country what we can do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Warriors are primed for the upset right here because when you look back, they won. Clippers won by 7 points, and Curry only had like 13 points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been on fire after that 60-point game, 30-point game. I don't expect Curry to play like that again. Please believe that. Curry is going to be up for this one. You know, you kind of – I bet he probably heard Patrick Beverly over there chirping like he knocked him up and all that. You know, Curry hears all that. He's motivated. He's like, you know what, I can't give Beverly that, so I'm going to show him, you know, the real Steph Curry tonight.
Paul knows what it's like to be on the Clippers
tonight. Steph will have about 30.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll find out. All right, stick with us because after this final break, we are going to play What Were You Thinking? Yes, with Big Shot Robert Horry. We didn't get to sneak this in the last time he was here, so we're doing it today. All right, guys, welcome back. Since this is Big Shot Robert Horry's, well, second time as an official member of the Jump team, we have to play our favorite game with them. Oh, yes, it is time for What Were You Thinking with Robert Horry. So first up, what were you thinking, Robert Horry, when you tried to dunk twice on one possession? And let me just remind everybody about what was going on there.
But you know, the funny part about this is when someone hits your legs, you don't even think about the basketball. You think about, oh, I'm about to go down.
Right.
And I just grabbed the rim, so I'm hanging out up here. You know what?
Like, oh,
ball's right here. Let's just dunk it back in. You know, the funny part is Phil was irate over on the sideline about this. But I was like, that counts, right? Because you protect yourself. You can hold on to the rim, protect yourself.
I definitely count on the playground. Playground, that's a bucket.
Well, that's no doubt. Have you ever seen anyone do that in an NBA game?
Yeah, in the playground, I did. Not in the game.
Not in a game. All right, next up, what were you thinking, Robert Horry, when Vlade Divac tapped the ball out to you in game four of the 2002 Western Conference Finals? We all remember this.
You know, I'm sitting here like, oh, no, he didn't just come out.
No, he didn't.
Oh, said, did you not realize I just hit 2 threes in front of your bench and I'm talking trash and feeling good?
No,
you know,
he didn't.
Think about this. When you playing with dynamic players like Shaq and Kobe, you might be hot. You might not get a shot, but you messed up and let me get that shot right there, though.
I just noticed that layup attempt by Shaq.
It was short on.
That layup attempt was weak.
I'm glad he short on that one.
It happens. Have there been moments for you guys like that where, I mean, you've had so many huge shots, someone does something and you're like, do you understand how hot I am and who I am and what my track record is?
Oh, yes, I've definitely had that. I've had one incident in New York playing with the Spurs, and Pop actually took me out the game, and I was like, dude, do you know who I am?
Right.
Do you know who I am?
Oh my God.
And everybody was looking at it like, you taking Rob out for a last-second shot? I'm like, yeah, so I've had
that moment. I probably had that moment every game. I probably said that every game we lost.
You're shocking me here, Paul. Just shocking me. And that was without all those last-second shots and seven rings. But, you know, it's important to have confidence, and, you know, he called game. That's all I got to say. Next up, what were you thinking, Robert Horry, when you dunked on Rip Hamilton in the 2005 finals?
Y'all remember this.
First of all, I was hot right here. I'm mad that Bruce threw that at my ankles. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to take off. I'm like, as I'm flying through the air, I'm like, I think I can. And if you look, I barely got it in. Okay. It was a weak dunk.
Is there a point in midair where you're like, I'm not going to get there?
Oh, it was. As soon as I hit Rip's shoulder, I said, oh, I'm not going to get there. They're going to call a charge. But I extended just enough. And then, you know, I had to hurt my shoulder a little bit on that one.
Bopped him for the three. And then bopped him from three for the win after that. Oh, my God.
That was
one of the sickest fourth quarters I didn't see.
Yeah, that was, you know.
Playoffs, the moment. Oh, that was the finals, yeah. Right? Yeah, oh my gosh, that was crazy.
That was a decisive game too. So I had a goose egg in the first half.
Well, but no fear.
Yeah, because you have 30 in the fourth.
Long track record. What do y'all do when you're in the middle of a basketball move and you're like, this is not going to happen. I am not going to get there. This is not going to work. Do you like try to play it off as something else, or do you just take the L?
Oh, you got to just take the L. I mean, you know, if it ain't going to work out, you just got to hope they don't show it on ESPN that night.
Oh, you don't want to like extract yourself that da-na-na, da-na-na. You don't want to have that moment. And now they have, you know, all these moments where you mess up.
Yeah, just bloopers reel,
yeah,
right? Like just Shaq and a fool.
So you just pray that you can get to the rim or the outcome is not so bad.
Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever been dunked on where you took, like, a dunked on like that? Because I've never been dunked on where I've taken the charge. Has that ever happened?
Yes. It happened to me once. It was like you hear it, and you switch over, and next thing you know, is that Rain Man coming?
Is that who it was?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, no. And me just.
I always got out the way.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't have time. You go, you try to play good defense, you get back, you turn. It's like, oh, man.
Our friend Brian Windhorst says there's no shame in playing defense. There's
exactly,
nothing wrong with
but,
that.
Hey, Rain Man got a lot of people, so I'm not even mad about that. Sean Kemp was nice.
Big guy. What point in the Rain Man waste expansion process was that?
That had to be Seattle Rain Man.
That was Seattle Rain Man.
Okay.
Yeah, that was in their building doing
it. You know, it rained a lot in Seattle.
All right, last but not least, what were you thinking when you collided with Steve Nash, game four of the 2007 Western Conference Semis?
My favorite moment of all time right here. I'm just kidding, Steve. But you know, the thing about this is I was trying to get over there and take a charge, but then I said, oh, I'm not going to make it. You know what? I'm just going to punish him.
Man,
you know?
give us the real story. You wanted to hurt Steve right here.
Hey, no, if I really wanted to hurt Steve, you know, Steve was my rookie in Phoenix. So if I really wanted to hurt Steve, I could have did a lot of damage. If you look at my arm, I never extended it. So that lets you know right there. If I wanted to do some damage.
You was a tricky vet, so you knew how to give a hard foul without making it look hard. You know, a little hip pointer. I know them tricks, Rob. Come on. I know that.
Oh, trust me. I know all the tricks. If I wanted to hurt him, I could have hurt him.
What was it like as this video got replayed and replayed and replayed again after?
Oh, hold on. Who'd you elbow after that?
Oh,
they didn't even show that.
Oh, yeah, you missed that. That was something
else
to talk about.
Oh, he elbowed Barbosa right up. Look.
There wasn't Barbosa. It was the one, I can't think of his name. He was always fighting with Kobe, too. The guy that was always fighting with Kobe.
Rajah Bell.
So it was Rajah Bell.
Thank you.
Hold on, listen. He got into it. Watch the after effect. Here it go. Like, what's happening? Ooh.
Hey, you know, you forget who I played under. I played under Rudy T.
Right.
And you just don't let anybody run up on you like that, man. In this game, you know, Rajah Bell is one of those type of guys that would start something. So I had to protect myself at all costs.
Ooh,
you know?
I didn't see that.
Hey.
Knock Steve Nash down, then elbow Rajah Bell. Come on, he's just a bully out here.
That was an $80,000 bump right there.
Really?
Because I was suspended for two games during the playoffs.
Well, but here's the thing. Guess what happened at the end of this playoff run? That would be a seventh championship ring. So I'm going to say you probably are looking at that in total as a net win.
Hey, of course, because the playoff check was nice. So.
Oh, yeah, you made that back up. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the thing about
that's not a playoff. That's the championship check.
Exactly.
That's different from the playoff check.
But you know everyone in Phoenix is still talking about that.
Oh, all the time. I was on the elevator with the Suns owner, and he was looking at me. And his wife was talking like, oh, you tall. You play basketball? And he's like, honey, you don't know who that is? We don't like him.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm going to switch gears now to something that is difficult for all of us here in Los Angeles. I want to pay respects to Hall of Fame Dodgers manager Tommy Lasorda, who died at the age of 93. Lasorda suffering sudden cardiopulmonary arrest at his home Thursday night, taken to the hospital where he was pronounced dead less than an hour later. Lasorda managed the Dodgers from 76 to 96, won two World Series titles, four National League pennants, eight division crowns. You know, another LA icon, Magic Johnson, paid his respects to Lasorda. Here on Twitter, you can see that. But Robert, you met Tommy plenty of times. What was it like being around him?
You know, Tommy was one of the most amazing people you will ever meet. When you talk about icons and true legend, he was a true legend. I wish people could just have sat down with us and listened to the stories we talked about the Rat Pack. Rat Pack alone is the most interesting thing ever.
And that's another segment. We'll be back on Monday. That's right.
Oh, man.